This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
True. As you could imagine, now with three of the largest economies on the continent, that's Egypt, Nigeria, and South Africa, being in the BRICS, and of course Ethiopia being the chair of censorship of the African Union, I think this is a very powerful vote.
That's David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, on BRICS and why it matters. Details coming up also. The UN warns that violence in eastern DRC and a possible attack on Goma will have a catastrophic impact. And Gambia's former dictator Yahya Jammeh declares he is coming back. All these and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. UN agencies warn the surging violence in eastern DRC and the risk of an imminent attack by the M23 armed group on Goma will have a catastrophic impact on hundreds of thousands of civilians. I talked to reporter Jafar Sabiti Al-Katanti, who is in the city center of Goma, to brief us on the heavy fighting around the city, which has displaced thousands.
Now the Eastern DRC is hell because fighting ongoing for like 2 weeks nonstop in the province of North Kivu and South Kivu. I'm based in Goma, where fighting are just 20 kilometers west of the city and around 15 kilometers north of the city. And, you know, Goma, the hub of the Eastern DRC, was the homeland of many people, and many IDPs decided to stay, to come in Goma, fleeing atrocities in their villages and cities. And now, as fighting are really close of Goma, the situation is complicated. And many rockets from the front line are landing in some neighborhoods of Goma, and this makes a lot of victims. And many people have been killed and other injured during this week.
Jafar, you're saying fighting is going on. Who is fighting who?
M23, backed by the Rwandan army, attacked the DRC army forces in their position in Sake. And since not only in Sake, but in different zones, but I say Sake because Sake is really close to the city of Goma, and fightings are intense as FRDC won't permit M23 to take the control of Sake because Sake is the last point before Goma. That's why I say the situation is confused because many detonation, even now in my neighborhood where I stay, for each 2 minutes, we are hearing detonations of bombs coming from the M23 side or from the FRDC side.
And Jafar, the number of people displaced has now surged to more than 400,000.
For now, the situation is rough because it's even more than the 400,000 people, because those are the ones registered by local NGOs. But many people are not being registered. And the their situation is so bad because for around 6 months, there is no humanitarian assistance in all IDP camps in and around Goma. And these people are facing the baddest situation of their life because they don't have food, they don't have potable water, they don't have medication, they need everything which they don't have, unfortunately.
And also, Jafar, human rights violations, including looting, injuries, murders, kidnappings, and arbitrary arrests of displaced people mistaken for rebels, have escalated. Is that report true?
Yes, that's true. You know, this war has also the ethnic face. When M23 rebels with Rwandan army take the control of a city which is a Hutu majority. They kill people. They do massacres on Congolese Hunde. As they are Tutsi, you know, the conflicts between Tutsi and Hutu people. Not only the massacre, but sometimes they enroll young people by force in to join their movement in order to increase the number of fighters. And these reports are really true, as all NGOs in the zone had already reported on it.
That was our reporter Jafar Sabati Al-Katanti. He talked to me from the city center of Goma in the eastern DRC. BRICS, which stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, along with six new members, is a grouping of emerging economies hoping to increase their sway in the global order. David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, tells me that BRICS matters despite President Donald Trump's threat to impose heavy tariffs on member nations if they were to create a new currency to rival the U.S. dollar.
BRICS is an organization involving Brazil, India, Russia, China, and South Africa, which were its initial members. And we now have the addition of Iran, Egypt, Ethiopia, and the United Arab Emirates to it. And the idea is actually to have an alternative forum outside of the hegemonic powers, which are usually centered around the European Union and the United States, where other regional powers can also have a voice, and particularly the voices from the global south. Which is why a lot of the members are from developing countries like Brazil, India, South Africa, Egypt, Iran, UAE, and Ethiopia.
And the latest professor is Nigeria officially became a part of the international economic and political bloc BRICS last Friday.
This is true. As you could imagine, now with three of the largest economies on the continent, that's Egypt, Nigeria, and South Africa, being in the BRICS, and of course, Ethiopia being the chair centership of the African Union, I think this is a very powerful voice. But I must also add that as much as the BRICS is expanding from its initial five members to now nine members, it comes with its own challenges. Because the more voices you have, the harder it is to develop consensus. I think that's one challenge for BRICS. The other challenge is each of these nine countries also has its own unique geostrategic and economic interests. So Egypt's interests might not always align with those of Ethiopia. For example, like we saw with the Grand Renaissance Dam project, South Africa might not always agree with Brazil, Iran might not always agree with Russia, and so on and so forth. So there is a space for major powers to divide this alliance. I think the third challenge for the BRICS going forward is each of these countries is also very closely tied to Western economic and hegemonic powers in very important ways, that they do not want to abandon their ties with the U.S. and the EU.
And, Professor, the BRICS countries have sought to reduce the primacy of the U.S. dollar in international trade. Can a BRICS currency replace the dollar?
Not in the short term, maybe in the long term. I think for two main reasons. One is the dollar has been the international reserve currency now for over 70 years. Since the establishment of the Bretton Woods institutions, the post-World War II international order with the establishment of the World Bank and the IMF. So there's a historical memory and legacy of the dollar as a reserve currency. Countries will not quickly move to something new and untested.
And Professor, this is a quote from Donald Trump. We require a commitment from these countries that they will neither create a new BRICS currency nor back any other currency to replace the U.S. dollar, or they will face 100% tariffs and should expect to say goodbye to selling into the wonderful U.S. economy. That's what Trump wrote on his social media platform, Truth Social.
So I think his bullying sort of rhetoric will actually bring these countries together because no country likes to be shamed in the international society of states. And I must also add that as much as Donald Trump is threatening to attack and punish other countries, these other countries can also attack and punish the U.S. So, you know, if U.S. throws a punch, Uncle Sam can throw a punch, but the other countries can also hit back. And I'm thinking, for example, about counter tariff from China on U.S. goods and services. The U.S. needs to be careful about overextending its hegemony and its ability to enforce its will around the world, right? There are limits to the expansion of American power. Yes, the U.S. is the most powerful country in the world, but in the global multipolar system, it's really important to build alliances and consensus within multilateral frameworks.
That was David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York. He spoke to me from New York. Several African countries have for generations depended on income their economies. But with gems now being manufactured in laboratories, these revenues are shrinking, forcing diamond producers to think up new ways to make money. Darren Taylor reports.
Botswana is the world's largest producer of gem-quality diamonds. The International Monetary Fund says the stones make up 80% of the country's exports and one-third of fiscal revenues. Botswana's gross domestic product is around $20 billion, with a quarter of this consisting of diamond sales. But laboratory-produced diamonds are cutting into the country's revenues. Lab-grown diamonds are chemically identical to natural diamonds, but are cheaper. They also are less environmentally damaging to make compared with mined gems. Botswana is just one of several countries, including Angola, Namibia, and South Africa, that no longer can count on diamonds to be an economic mainstay. In Botswana's case, it's investing in agriculture and copper to make up the shortfall. Nosi Mzamo, the chief executive officer of South Africa's state diamond trader, says it's time to market natural diamonds as luxury exclusive products.
In South Africa, we have been in this space of mining diamonds for over 100 years. So we thought then for the country, let us be the one who are marketing the natural diamonds and making sure that the current generation understand the importance of natural diamonds, what they do to communities, what their impact is, and also then ensure that our clients that we're serving, they are able to market the diamonds that are cut and polished by South Africans.
Each naturally mined diamond is unique, says Mzamo, and has a story behind it. She says the diamond industry must start telling these stories to compete with laboratory jewels. John Bristow, a former executive at international diamond mining giant De Beers, sees opportunity for Angola, Namibia, and South Africa. He explains that many years of heavy flow of rivers such as the Okavango, Orange, and Vaal have exposed what he describes as diamond pipes. He says these are vertical structures in the Earth's crust that contain diamonds.
And those diamonds that sat in the top parts of those now eroded pipes have been transported down our big rivers to the West Coast. At the West Coast, we have amazing marine and coastal diamond deposits on our old beaches. And we have wonderful alluvial deposits all the way down the Orange and Vaal River to our West Coast.
He says Southern Africa's diamond producers should mine these deposits of alluvial diamonds because they're sure to yield fantastic gems. But before such opportunities can be harnessed, says Bristow, governments need to cut the red tape stifling their diamond industries. He says that unlike in mining nations such as Canada and Australia, most African diamond industries have little access to information about property deeds or cadastres and which areas are actively being mined and which mines have shut down.
It's very easy if I want to go and explore for diamonds in the northwest of Australia. I can almost make an application from sitting in my desk on my laptop. That's how efficient the cadastre systems are in those countries. And Botswana, for that matter, too, is a really, you know, very friendly place to go and explore and to find new deposits.
In a report late last year, global consultancy firm McKinsey said the international diamond industry is at an inflection point. Its research shows younger adults spend more on luxury goods than previous generations. But the report says they want luxury products to be socially conscious. They want their diamonds to be mined ethically and with regard for worker rights. Bristow says African producers still have a lot to do to live up to these standards. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Gambia's former dictator, Yahya Jammeh, says he is coming back and intends to retake control of his political party in an audio message the French news agency AFP obtained on Thursday. Jammeh ruled the tiny West African nation for 22 years, presiding over a government accused of carrying out torture, using death squads, and many other abuses. Jammeh has been in exile in Equatorial Guinea since 2017 after he lost an election to current president Adama Barrow, but he still has many supporters in his home country and often weighs in on its politics. The Gambian government in 2022 endorsed the recommendations of a commission that looked into atrocities perpetrated under Jammeh, with authorities agreeing to prosecute 70 people, including the former president, who came to power following a 1994 coup. Most people encounter customs and border protection agents when they enter the United States at land border crossings or airports, but those agents are also responsible for inspecting goods leaving the country. VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman reports from the Port of Baltimore about a significant trade in stolen vehicles leaving the U.S. for Africa.
U.S. Customs and Border Protection has a nearly impossible assignment: try to intercept all the stolen automobiles leaving the country. Here at the Port of Baltimore, the hundreds that officers do discover annually are mostly bound for a particular region of the world, according to the CBP's Adam Rotman.
I'd say 90 to 95% of every one of our stolen automobiles is headed to West Africa.
Auto theft is a problem accelerating across the U.S., according to University of Miami criminology professor Alex Piquero.
There are people who are stealing cars and car parts to sell them very quickly in the local markets. And then there are people literally stealing cars and literally putting them on containers and selling them, you know, shipping them all over the world, not just to Africa, but also to the Middle East and to Asia.
CBP uses mobile giant X-ray machines to scan containers and determine whether they seem suspicious and should be opened. The manifest for this container did not list any vehicles, explains CBP Port of Baltimore Director Rotman.
It's supposed to be only household goods in there. In this example, there's at least four cars in that container.
This 2021 Mercedes-Benz, valued at $48,000, was fraudulently purchased in the state of Ohio with a stolen identity. It was intercepted here in Maryland and was intended to be shipped to the West African country of Togo.
This container we just opened today, the vehicle on the top here, that Honda, we've already verified through the VIN number that that car is stolen. There is two more in the back. There's another one hanging from chains.
Law enforcement says criminals frequently rent cars for a 30-day period, drive the vehicles directly into a container, and post a fake VIN, the vehicle identification number, over the real one. The car will not be reported stolen for a month. By then, it could already be on a ship on the high seas. Rotman's team hopes to intercept such cars before they head out to sea.
We noticed that the check digit on the VIN doesn't match what's supposed to be on a Ford truck.
Authorities in some countries in Africa are now working with Interpol to try to seize stolen vehicles that managed to slip past U.S. port checks. But that cooperation is inconsistent, says Professor Piquero.
Some governments will play nicer and other governments won't. You can't search every container. You know, that's why the security at the port is so critically important.
With so many buyers seeking a deal on a used car, often with no questions asked, there is unlikely to be a slowdown in the global traffic of stolen vehicles. Steve Herman, VOA News, Sparrows Point, Maryland.
And now, time for our sports roundup. I have our VOA sports analyst, Mokbil Yabaro, on Africa News Tonight. Thank you for being here, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So, in European football, there were plenty of Champions League and Europa League matches. Which one stood out?
Absolutely, Hayes. We're just going to start off with Champions League action. The game of the week for sure has to be PSG versus Manchester City. Manchester City has been on a slide, downward trajectory of sorts from their last couple of years of dominance throughout Europe. And they felt like they were kind of getting their groove back a little bit, but when they played on Wednesday against PSG, it really wasn't. They started off really good to a 2-0 lead to PSG. But then the floodgates opened. PSG was able to turn it around and score four.
My gosh.
Was a comeback of epic proportions. Losing 4-2 while having a 2-0 lead drops Manchester City almost completely out of contention for Champions League, especially with this new format. It's not looking good for them. They are not currently doing well in the Premier League. As you know, they're currently sitting the fifth or sixth position. And this is another competition that they're looking like they're going to be out of. Another positive side, though, is a team like Real Madrid, who also started relatively similar to them this season, but have really gotten it going. Real Madrid beats RB Salzburg 5-1. Mbappe and Vinny and the like, Jude Bellingham, Rodrigo, all their attacking front really have been clicking really well. So it's good to see them kind of back in it. If we're looking at even just from a standings perspective, Real now is in the 16th spot. Now, funny enough, Liverpool were able to beat them early on when they played, and they might end up going up against each other. Now, you just don't want to play Real Madrid, even though Liverpool's at the top of the Champions League. That's not a draw you want. You work so hard to play a lower-seeded team thinking that you can avoid a team like Real, but Real, the way they're clicking right now, is not going to be fun for Liverpool if they end up clashing. And speaking about Liverpool, Liverpool was able to beat Lille 2-1. So comfortably, they are sitting at the top of Champions League with 7 wins, no draws, no losses. So very comfy at the top. But if your reward for doing all of that is to play Real Madrid when they start clicking, I don't know how much of a reward that is.
Our producer is very content with that last report you just gave.
Absolutely.
And in tennis, the Australian Open is wrapping up this weekend. Who are the favorites going into this weekend?
Yeah, yes. So if I'm looking at both the men and the women, I would have to say the world number ones on both sides, right? Sinner and Sabalenka should be the favorites on both sides. Against Sinner will be Zverev. Zverev will be playing against Sinner on Saturday, on Sunday actually, and he ended up defeating Djokovic, but Djokovic was injured. He kind of almost DQ'd himself and said that, you know, I'm kind of out of it. And Sabalenka will be going against the American, Madison Keys. This is her second time in a Grand Slam final. Let's see if she can get it done against the world number one.
And Mokbil, lastly, in basketball news, have the hottest team changed over the course of the year, or are they the same ones we've been discussing all season?
All season long, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Oklahoma City Thunder are still at the top of the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference. If they can keep this pace after All-Star Weekend, which should be coming up in a few weeks, they will be somewhat of a force to play in the playoffs.
Our VOA sports analyst, Mokbil Yabaro, thank you for your input. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Helen Cordian, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.